Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Long have you awaited, and now it is here, Free for All Friday, here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. On Fridays, though, we get to have fun. Last Friday, though, I failed you. I wanted to leave open some time for you to hear the three-hour economics roundtable, so there wasn't a free-for-all Friday. Some of you might have been thinking, Trent, I didn't want the three-hour roundtable. I just wanted my free-for-all Friday. And now here it is. I want to share with you an episode I did on a podcast related to homeschooling. So a friend of mine, Bonnie Landry, does it, but the other co-host is Elizabeth Evans. Elizabeth's husband, Tim, works for Covenant Eyes, the company that makes the software, the accountability software for pornography. So if you put it on your computer and another accountability partner you choose can see what websites you're visiting, and if you're looking at unethical, you know, immoral websites, they're alerted and they have a heart-to-heart with you about it. But many years ago, Tim was the video editor at Catholic Answers. He helped to create a lot of my DVDs, did a lot of great work there. And Tim and Elizabeth and their son, they were kind of our first little friend group when we first got to Catholic Answers, when Laura and I, when we lived in our little apartment, our quaint little apartment across the way from the drug dealers and the lady who bragged about stabbing someone in her apartment, which quickly moved us to want to get out of there. But before we could, we would spend time in nicer places. We would go see Tim and Elizabeth. And so that was a lot of fun. So we go back a long ways. And when Laura told me Elizabeth was doing this podcast, I said, hey, I'd love to come on and just chat about homeschooling, because we're getting involved in homeschooling now with its promises and its trials. Laura is homeschooling Matthew. He's doing like kindergarten, first grade kind of stuff. And it's fun. It's challenging. And Laura's the one doing the lion's share of the work here. I mean, she's home with him and doing the lessons, though I like to take part and help here and there where I can. But the goal of this podcast is I'm not doing like an exhaustive defense of homeschooling, or here's all the facts about homeschooling, or here's how to be good at homeschooling. I thought it would just be fun to share that I'm a homeschooling skeptic. I'm a former homeschooling skeptic. Like when I grew up, especially when I was like in college, I made fun of home. I grew up in the homeschooling community. Like when I did Catholic youth ministry, a lot of my friends and people I knew, they had been homeschooled, and I was just immature then, maybe still a little immature now. But you know, I made fun of it. I just thought like, oh, it's not as good as going to real school, because I was a public school kid. But then as I got older, the more and more I thought about it, I realized I was wrong about all this. And now that I have kids, like before you have kids, you look at the world one way. It's completely different. But when you have children, the world just completely changes. It's not about you as much anymore. You realize, wow. And I think about my kids. I think about Matthew and Thomas and John Paul. And I think like one of them will probably have children. I know Matthew talks about being a priest. Thomas, I caught him the other day in his room. He set up his little mass kit and was saying mass to himself. Maybe they'll all become priests. Who knows? But it's highly plausible they might have kids, and those kids might have kids. And when you have kids, you're like, wow, you know, the next 100 or 150 years, I might not be here, but I want the world to be a decent place for them. It completely changes you. And I thought, well, how do I make it a decent place for them now? I look back on the education I received. I didn't want that for my children. And so homeschooling took on a completely different light when we were at the position to actually educate a child at our home, according to what we thought would be best for his educational development. So I want to share with you, this episode where I share with Bonnie and Elizabeth my conversion from being a homeschool skeptic, my thoughts on homeschooling, and also kind of my tips, and especially the tips I have for husbands who may not be as reticent towards their wives being engaged in homeschooling. So check all that out. I hope you enjoy it. And without further ado, here is my tale of my confession of a former homeschool skeptic.
So what was your own grade school experience, and how did that shape your thoughts about homeschooling?
Yeah, so I'm glad you actually asked related to grade school and elementary school, because I was trying to think back about, well, why did I change my mind about homeschooling? Why was I so anti-homeschooling for most of my life? It's so weird. I wasn't necessarily an enemy of homeschooling, but I just kind of made fun of it. I didn't really take it very seriously. And I don't know why I thought that, because my own schooling wasn't great.
It's almost like I took pride in being mistreated in my own educational process. So when it comes to education, I went to elementary school in Encinitas, California. I went to Pacific View Elementary. And actually what's funny is the school is abandoned. It's like it's falling apart and abandoned because it's sitting on really valuable real estate overlooking the ocean and nobody knows what to do with it. So it's weird driving by the old ghost bones, my old school. So I did that in a few other elementary schools. But I just remember the teachers, like I knew more than the other students. So the teachers just kind of either ignored me or let me do my own thing, or it would be weird. Like one time a teacher just said, Trent's going to show everyone how to do the multiplication tables. And the teacher just sat in the back and was like doing a crossword puzzle or something while I showed the rest of the students. And I'm still mad about that to this day, that like I didn't get paid or, and so I guess what's hard is like, you know, going through that in other schooling, I feel like, you know, we all have a memory of like that great teacher. If you went to public, or as I like to call it, government schooling, you have that memory of that great teacher or the great teachers that really helped you. But I really feel like they stand out because the other teachers don't stand out or actually weren't very helpful in one's development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if that makes sense. Took that in stride, right? You know, I know when I started homeschooling, my husband, you know, I brought this idea up with my husband. He thought it was just weird. He's totally on board now, but he thought it was weird. And he said, well, why? Like, you know, I was fine. And, you know, which is actually a debatable statement. But, you know, in his mind's like, you know, what's the point? Go ahead. But what's the point? Right. And, you know, you got to wonder, and you look back, those outstanding teachers really are few and far between, actually.
That's what makes them so outstanding, is that on the backdrop amongst the other teachers, you don't remember them as much. Or if you do remember them, it's usually because of something negative. I remember teachers who would tell me, we would ask them questions in class and they would say that these weren't their notes. So they didn't know how to answer our questions. They had gotten the notes from another teacher. In high school, I had another teacher who had like a little mini meltdown in class and refused to teach us for like a week to figure things out. And it's not just the teaching element. It was the other students in elementary school or middle school. You had typical bullies. The first time I ever saw pornographic material, it was other seventh graders that showed it to me in middle school. And of course, that was back in the year 1997, 98. So it's quite tame compared to what students can show one another nowadays. So I just feel like I almost used to be against homeschooling because it's like I survived the trial by fire. And like I wanted my kids to have that pride of having made it through the lion's den and the homeschoolers had it easy. But now that I have kids, I'm like, why would I put them through that? Why would I?
So in one sentence, like your one liner about why you would be against homeschooling, how would you frame that?
I guess it's because, and this still holds true today a little bit. It's that you never hear anyone say, wow, I would have never guessed you were public schooled. But people often say, wow, I would have never guessed you were homeschooled.
Yeah.
And so I do think that the people who are homeschooled, they exhibit particular traits that make them identifiable. But what's changed for me is that once what I thought was a negative is now a positive. So in the past, when I was more against homeschooling, I would have said, you know, homeschoolers, they're just kind of naive, or they're just like gullible, even. They've been sheltered from the world. But now what I would say is that not naive or gullible, but it's optimistic and not cynical. So it's like the things that like I took pride in like having been broken a little by the system. But now I'm like, no, you don't. The world is hard enough as it is. We don't need to make it harder on kids. Now, I do agree, you know, homeschooling no system is perfect. There, you know, there can be cases where you homeschool someone and they're horribly sheltered and not prepared for the real world. Just like in public school or in public universities, kids get sheltered, but it's under wokeism, like hates, you know, speech codes and triggering. And so I think anything that's too sheltered is bad, but that's not unique to homeschooling.
Sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, even amongst your own personalities of your own kids, like for my kids, some of them were, you know, naive, maybe gullible, maybe, you know, and some of them were quite worldly, right? And so you have to find the balance in that, like the ones who tend to want to be sheltered, provide them with a little bit more. And the ones who are maybe more worldly is, you know, help them to walk through the world without being so attracted to it. Right.
Yes.
You know, so, yeah. So you can get a lot of that even in your own family, that you may have to alter things a little bit as they mature and, you know, the world becomes apparent to them, or they want to run from it.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember which factors first led you to openness for home education?
Well, I think part of it might be, I don't know if it's selfish or not. We really enjoy our children. So it's like, we really, you want to spend time with them. And we had no reason we didn't need school. I think honestly, a lot of times people, why a person would choose either private or government primary education, like for an elementary student, I think a lot of it, childcare is factored in. We're seeing this with the pandemic. A lot of people are being honest, saying we need to get kids back in school, especially elementary, not so much because for their learning, but because parents have relied on that as childcare. And mm-hmm. so we were a single income family. Now, there was a while where Laura also worked part time, but we didn't rely on childcare in order to do that. We just kind of juxtaposed our work schedules, but we didn't have to rely on any sort of childcare. So we weren't in the position. I think a lot of people select elementary education out of need more than a conscious effort to select, you know, what might be best for them. But as we went on, though, Elizabeth, as Matthew got older, we thought, well, where should he learn? Maybe I still felt, oh, maybe he should go to school. But then I thought more about government schooling. I just realized, it's just really not up to par. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you just see how funds that have been put into government education for the past 40 years, test scores haven't improved. And even with the pandemic now, I mean, I would say I'm not mad at teachers, really. I'm mad at teachers' unions. Yeah, I mean, you still have unions.
You're mad about one teacher.
Oh, yeah, because, I didn't get paid that day. I should have gotten paid.
So fair enough.
Yeah, so yeah, but in other schools, they're saying that they don't want to go back until everybody is vaccinated or every student, even though studies have shown it is relatively safe for them to do that. And so it just boggles my mind at how detrimental it is for kids. And the standout teachers, they can't stand out. A great movie that relates to this is the movie Stand and Deliver. Did you guys ever see that movie, Stand and Deliver?
I think I saw it years ago. I don't remember it.
It's about Jaime Escalante. He was a calculus teacher at an inner city school in Los Angeles, and he had students who could barely do arithmetic, and he taught them so well they passed the Calc AP exam. And the district thought they cheated because these are such poor students. So they retook it and they still passed. And the movie ends really triumphantly. But the epilogue that you don't know about in the movie is that Escalante quit because the other teachers hated him, because he went above and beyond the union contracts. So like, he would do extra tutoring, he would do longer days, and the other teachers hated that he didn't just do the minimum that the contracts required and made them look bad. And so It's stuff like that that just really disenchanted me. And so we knew government schooling wasn't going to work. And then I thought, well, maybe we could do charter schooling. And there's some great charters here in Texas. Or Catholic schooling. But at the end of the day, I really felt that the big thing that helped me to choose homeschooling was just the complete control you have over these formative periods. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're especially from age 0 to 6. That really just sets, this is your child's temperament and personality for their life. And to hand that over to somebody else, it's something that we didn't want to do.
Yeah. Right. And to hand over the joy of experiencing it to somebody else for 6 hours a day, you know, you started with, because we really like spending time with our kids. And that was huge for me. I just thought, wow, she's so interesting. My oldest was, you know, 4 and a half. She's so interesting right now. And her insights into life are so interesting. She's so much fun. You know, I put in all this hard work, you know, to get her to this point. And now I'm going to, you know, send her out to, so somebody else gets to enjoy that. Who won't actually enjoy it? Because she'll have 30 other kids in the class, right? So,
right.
You know, it doesn't make sense, you know, that ultimately it's all about love, right? You know, this is another way we show love to our children, right? And I mean, there are other educational options. Doesn't mean you love your kids less, but it is an option too. It is a way we can show this, right? And be with them.
So how does it feel to look back on your negative ideas that you had prior to your concerns ever creep back?
You know, sometimes. I mean, for example, there, I'm not going to be explicit because I don't believe in sharing embarrassing details about one's children in public, but there will be things, you know, you, when you're in a homeschooled environment, you know, I concern about socialization. I want to make sure that, you know, you should be able to relate to lots of different kinds of people, but public schools are not like the real world because you're around people your same age in these pods, kind of, as opposed to lots of different kinds of people of different ages. And I think sometimes for, you know, peer pressure can be a nice way to nip certain behaviors in the bud where, you know, you're just socially, I mean, that's about learning etiquette in general, right? How do your kids learn to not be slobs and barbarians, like to eat, like eating dinner without being rude about it? You have to shame them at the table, basically, right? You know, you just, that's not okay. That's not okay. And so sometimes it's a bit easier in public at school. Kids learn that's not okay from their peers. And that works for some things. But then if they start shaming them for things that are good, like being devout, or entice them to do things that are bad, that's where, so peer pressure is only great in like 5% of the cases, which isn't enough for me to hand the reins over to other people to raise my kid, not just the teachers, but the other students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you are familiar with this book. There's a, an amazing book called Hold On To Your Kids. It's primarily about attachment, and it's a, he's a psychologist, Canadian psychologist that wrote this book, and he's really working on attachment theories developed at the turn of the century. And he's essentially, the byline of the book, I can't remember what it is, but it's something like why peers matter more than parents, you know, or why parents matter more than peers. And he's saying we are living in a culture where peers are raising their peers.
Right.
Right. It's that simple. And so he's not, he did homeschool. He's an advocate of homeschooling, but he just said it's just easier to avoid that, you know, 90% of that negative peer, peer formation, you know, and he's talking mostly about teenagers, you know, that peer formation that happens that's so insidious really in our culture. But if we, his idea is to raise awareness about that, because it is scary. We shouldn't be being raised by peers, because also your peers will dump you in a heartbeat.
Right.
Right. Oh, you're in school. You know, your parents don't dump you. Mm-hmm. You know, they might, you know, get mad at you, or they might whatever, but your parents are going to dump you. And, you know, things like even teen suicide rates and whatnot speak to that. Right. It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. So they're attaching to peers. Right. Which is scary. One of the things that I was really excited about this particular topic was because I've met a lot of women whose husbands are not on board. Occasionally it's the other way around, right? But in general, I'm not sure why, maybe women are just more intuitively, you know, connected to the child in their young years for sure. But the husbands are not on board. So two-part question. What would you say to the men who aren't on board? And what would you say to their wives if they were struggling with this, right?
Right. I think what I would say is just for the wives, go easy on yourself. And for the husbands, you know, trust your spouse. But you're in a good position to see, are they being overwhelmed or not? And you can be there to help them. That's not either or. I mean, for us, we love homeschooling now, but that could change in the future. We may feel like we can't provide the best home education environment for our children, but that doesn't mean necessarily we're going to plop Matthew just into the most godless public school we can find nearby. Like, for example, he will do a Catholic school co-op 2 days a week in with teachers and peers that we trust. And so it's more of a hybrid model instead of being at home doing the entire homeschooling curricula. So trust yourself and don't feel this either or, like, oh, I can't do 100% of homeschooling here, therefore we just got to go to public school, or we got to pay for this private school. There are a lot of things in between. I teach at Homeschool Connection, so a lot of especially middle school and high school students, they do online classes. Their parents facilitate and check their progress, but you get another teacher. I mean, it's, you know, or tutors or things like that. I think, though, for the husbands, what I would say to them is, you know, be careful that you're not idealizing, especially if you grew up in a public school environment like I did, you're not idealizing what you came from. And remember what it was really like. You might think, well, my wife was never trained to be a teacher. Well, she doesn't have to be. I think most things that elementary school teachers are taught are not the subject matter. It is classroom management skills. I agree. Laura is not prepared to manage a class of 30 students, but she doesn't have to. And so when you start getting it out of your mind, I mean, I remember my mom went into an elementary school classroom once and argued with my elementary school teacher because she told us, because the teacher told us one is a prime number. And my mom said, no, one is not a prime number. Prime numbers don't work if one is a prime number. It's a little thing, but she went and she proved the teacher wrong. And a lot of the teachers, they know more about managing classrooms than the subject matter. So if you can manage your children at home, you could do fine. I think the other, okay, I guess I'll go on my big unload on the husbands.
Let's go.
The other thing would be, get it out of your head. You might think, well, how is my wife going to do the 8 hours of school day at home with the kids? It doesn't have to be. They do that for babysitting so that kids can be dropped off before parents go to work. Most of the time, you're shuffling between class. You were given busy work, worksheets, project. It was a lot of recess, lunch. There was time. And frankly, especially in elementary school, the only things you really need to learn are reading, writing, and basic arithmetic and shape. Especially reading and writing. I mean, like social studies in the fifth grade, like learning about ancient Egypt. Nobody remembers that, except that they built the pyramids. Right. But the key there is just you're trying to teach elementary students. And this is the problem also. Look, the goal of your spouse in doing homeschooling is not to teach the kids everything you learned in school. It's to teach them to love learning so that they will go and learn it. I will be frank with you. I mean, I have to know a fair amount of stuff as an apologist. Like on Catholic radio, you know, one show I'm talking about quantum mechanics. The other show I'm talking about ancient history. I most of the stuff I know from my job and my work, I didn't learn in school. Even theology, I learned it just reading on my own. The only way to be successful at learning is for someone to develop a passion for educating themselves. And your spouse is capable of doing that with your children. The last thing I'll say for the husbands is, yeah, go easy on your spouse and realize if she is going to be great at homeschooling, something else has to give at home. Something else has to give. You cannot have. So, I mean, other people have made this, the homeschool triangle, yada, yada. But the idea here is you cannot expect your wife to do a masterful homeschool environment, have an immaculate home, gourmet, sumptuous luxury dinners. You can't have all of that. Just like people would not expect you at work to basically do, you would be mad at your supervisor if he gave you 60 hours of work in a 40-hour week. So just don't have those expectations to your spouse. It's okay that you come home and it's messy. You know, sometimes I don't deal with mess as well. My wife makes fun of me because I'm a melancholic. You know, I'm introverted, analytic. I like being organized, but I have a very idiosyncratic organizing system. Laura will be like, where's the stapler? I'm like, it's in the third drawer over there in next to this junk over here. You know, it's organized, but in a disorganized way. And so, you know, if you come home and she feels like there's chaos there, you might have to learn to let that go so your wife has the mental reserves to do the other stuff that is important. And also, don't be checked out. Finally, and this may go into your next question, don't be checked out because if your wife is homeschooling, you can be more involved and participate and help. And it's not just like, oh, I'll check in at a parent-teacher conference once every 3 months. It's like you're way more actively involved and it's better. Way more entertaining parent-teacher conferences, we'll say.
Yeah, and you can have wine at your parent-teacher conferences. If you're meeting with the principal, you can have a glass of wine with them. One of the things that I think is really important to note there in what you said is ongoing discussion with your spouse about your own needs, their needs, the kids' needs to be something that you address regularly, right? And because things change. When you're raising kids, those first 10, 15 years of raising kids, everything changes about every 6 months.
Totally. Totally.
You know? And, you know, that doesn't really end anytime soon. And I used to always assess, like over the summertime, I always ended school in May. Right. And we rarely finished, but we did anything past noon. Right. Noon was our time for socializing and our time for housework and all of that. But our academics were in the morning.
Right.
And so those things were mattered because they gave me space. But I always took the summer to assess what was going on in my life so that my husband and I could say, okay, I can't do X. I can't continue to do X. You know, is there anything I can offload to you? Or is there any way, can we manage? Husbands are great problem solvers, right? Guys are great problem solvers. So if I say, okay, here's what I'm dealing with, when it's here are my issues, what do you think, right? How could we manage this better, right? So ongoing conversation is just so vital, right? Mm-hmm. As a community, do you have a Catholic, like a homeschool community that you hang with?
Oh yeah. Well, we just moved here 2 months ago. So like but we're already being introduced to it. And we feel very fortunate. There is a very good homeschooling community here. And that's important is to develop that community. So you don't feel like you're doing it all on your own mm-hmm. and you have those resources to help you.
And what's normal, right? We so badly mm-hmm. need to know what's normal.
You can compare. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything else you have to add? And my next question you've already answered, are you active in your kids' education? So in terms of supporting your wife, obviously you are. Is there anything that you actually teach?
Well, nothing formal yet. Laura will bring me in or I'll be listening here and there. And then I just kind of jump in and have fun with it. I end up doing a lot of theology, as one would expect from a Catholic apologist. So when Matt asks the very tough, and kids are great at asking tough theological questions to understand. So I do kind of, I guess I handle theology would be the subject I teach them. I also have fun with them. And when I spend time with them, that becomes a learning example. I'll give you two examples of that. One, we were talking about, I think about the Titanic. So we did an experiment in the backyard. I took an ice to show them how the Titanic sank. Elizabeth will appreciate, you know, this kind of stuff with kids. So we took an ice cube tray and I tied a rock to it. And then so that it was just barely positively buoyant. And I showed him how, you know, when the water goes into some of the cubes, it can still float. But once it goes past a certain number, it hits a critical mark and there's too much weight. And that is basically like how the Titanic sank. And he could watch and see that. The other thing was I was driving with him the other day. And we were listening to Little House on the Prairie. And there is a scene where they go into a well, they're digging a well, and they lower a candle to make sure it's safe. And they don't fully explain in the book why they do that. So I told him, well, they lower a candle to make sure there is clean air. If there is no air, the candle will go out because fire consumes air. So we went home, we took a candle, we lit it, put it on the counter, and then put a glass jar. I said, let's put a glass jar over it and see what happens. And he's like, the candle went out. I said, well, why did the candle go out? He said, because it used up all the air. And that could even be something he will remember his whole life. It's because I spent the time with him to do it. Even if a teacher had done it, he may not remember it as much as the fact that I shared the time with him to do it.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.